Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast, the Spider-Man Years. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are diving back into the Spider-Man animated series with the 11th episode of Season 1, The Hobgoblin, Part 1. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, let's briefly explain some of the trouble we've had with our podcast the past week. Essentially, for whatever reason, Apple wasn't uploading our podcast to their servers last week. Mm-hmm. I spent a grueling 6 out of the past 7 days trying to get it fixed. Long story short, I think it did get fixed. I do apologize for all our Android users who saw multiple uploads of the same episode, The Alien Costume Part 3. There's not much I could do about that because I had to keep testing to see if Apple would accept the podcast into their feed. And then the other long story short is that essentially, in order for us to get the podcast to work, we had to pay for a new server, which is no fun because we've essentially been using a server I've had for years with my website, williesimpson.com, which has been ostensibly free, but now we can't really use that anymore, so we had to go to like a third-party app called Buzzsprout, which after some moderately quick internet search, it's one of the best ones. So that's exciting. But at the same time, now there's costs involved with running the show. Now, that said, we like to pride ourselves on having a free show with no commercials, no advertisements, no Patreons, nothing related to our show. However, it is now expensive to run the show. So, there's good news and bad news. The good news is, we're not going to ask for any of your money whatsoever, at least for a year.
Yet.
So, maybe in February of 2020, we might do something, we might do like a fundraiser month, where we see if some of our most hardcore and loyal fans can contribute to our server costs. Now, like I said, that wouldn't come for a whole year from now, and
also it's not going to be mandatory.
It's not going to be mandatory.
Just be like, you know, if anyone can donate something to help us out with the new cost of the show, that would be cool. But if you can't, you can't. We understand.
Yeah, and the server costs aren't so high. Like, you know, based on our listenership, people wouldn't probably have to donate more than a dollar or two for an entire year. So if you know you're interested, and we wouldn't even need our fans to cover the entire. Like server cost, we're asking to subsidize, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there in an entire year. So don't worry about it for now. She'll continue to be free, and you know it'll always essentially remain free. The contribution will be totally out of the goodness of our listeners' hearts or their capability. Either way, you know, if they can't donate too, we understand that as well. So, but that business out of the way, hopefully this episode reaches your various podcast feeds on Monday morning, Eastern Standard Time, as we usually post them. So, I mean, it is slightly possible that there might be another delay. You know, we are transitioning to a new service, so there might be some hiccups along the road. I apologize for that, but we will continue to try to pump out these episodes as best we can. All right, so all that business out of the way, let's talk about Spider-Man. So we just finished the Venom trilogy. This is another new supervillain introduced. And really one of the all-time classic great ones in this series. The first reason for that is because Hobgoblin is voiced by none other than Mark Hamill, who, of course, everyone knows, one, as Luke Skywalker, two, as the Joker from the Batman animated series. So, you know, everyone knows who Mark Hamill is, obviously. But here he is entering the Marvel Universe as a really cool, you know, side villain character. Which is interesting because if you hear Mark talk about how he got the part of the Joker when he auditioned for Batman, he didn't want to be the Joker because that was like a major character. He wanted to just be like a side villain. Mm. Like, I forget who he mentions, maybe like the Clock King or somebody like random, like not like a mainstream villain, like a Joker, Two-Face, Riddler. He wanted to be like a side character.
He wanted to work less than more?
Well, or I think he just wanted to just do it as like a small niche little job where people wouldn't even know it's him. He wouldn't get a lot of attention.
Oh.
You know. But they gave him the Joker, which worked out really well, and he was surprised that he got that part. In this show, he gets more of that fantasy to come true.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing like more of a side character of in the Goblin universe. The Hobgoblin is the lesser of the goblins compared to the Green Goblin.
Yeah, right.
And it's interesting here that the Hobgoblin is introduced first before the Green Goblin, because Green Goblin is famously Spider-Man's like basically his number one villain ever. You know, like more than Venom, more than Kingpin. I mean, it's arguable, but in the original run of the comics, Green Goblin's the most tormenting and the most menacing and mysterious villain he faces. And he's a big mystery character, too, until they reveal who it is. Well, in the end, spoilers, it's Norman Osborn, but a lot of us know that because we've all seen the movies and read the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, but here, the Hobgoblin was like the successor character created in the early 80s, I believe, by John Romita, the artist, and Roger Stearns, the writer. And it was just like a way to revive the Green Goblin without bringing Norman Osborn back to life, which I think, you know, like he died in the comics at some point. Maybe they brought him back and he died again. Like, I don't know. It was like a complicated history
mm-hmm.
with the Green Goblin. So it's like instead of just bringing him back, they wanted to have the character, but different spin on it.
But Osborn is alive in this one just as himself.
Right, yeah. So in this one, Green Goblin doesn't yet exist. He right. will enter the show at some point.
They took creative license with the timelines and the characters.
Yes,
and
they
stuff.
Flipped it around. And in a weird way, I think it's for the best for the show because mm-hmm. it is satisfying later when they introduce the Green Goblin story because it's rather singular.
Mm.
I don't think it's like he doesn't become a recurring character like the Hobgoblin does. We see him a lot.
Yeah. But I just think it's funny because when I was watching the Hobgoblin on screen, I was trying to imagine the Joker because I yeah. knew it was Mark Hamill.
Right,
and it's like very similar.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Characters and is performances, I think.
Is the voice too similar to the Joker?
It doesn't matter. Yeah. When I was a kid, I didn't know it was the same voice actor,
right.
and it never crossed my mind.
Yeah, it might have crossed my mind as a kid. I don't remember how in tune I was to the Mark Hamill even playing the Joker. I must have been, because I was a huge Star Wars fan, so that must have come across.
I was, too. I just didn't have that information at my disposal for some reason.
Well, that's part of the reason why people love Mark Hamill, is because a whole generation of children love Star Wars, and then they also love the Batman show and Spider-Man subsequently. And they're kind of surprised when you discover that Luke Skywalker is the voice of the Joker.
Mm.
Like, none of it makes sense, because Luke Skywalker...
But he's a good guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's like... Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker is one of those, like, generic, like, late 70s, sandy blonde California teenager type guys.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, if you watch a lot of 70s era movies and TV shows, there's like Mark Hamill types are a dime a dozen. And not to denigrate Mark Hamill, but
it was a look.
Right. It was a look. And he was kind of a generic, like, pretty boy compared to Harrison Ford as Han Solo, who was more like a unique looking actor. Like a unique handsome man, a different unique white man at the time, you know. Diversity in white people in the 1970s was more of a thing than it is now. But the point is, like, Harrison Ford, like, stood out as a movie star. Mark Hamill is a little bit more generic. Despite that, Star Wars obviously became super huge, and Mark Hamill became a celebrity because of it. Kind of like a one-hit wonder a lot of the way. Like, his movie career basically died after Star Wars. He didn't get a chance to become a star like Harrison Ford.
I would argue that it's not because they look so different. In fact,
right.
I don't think they look different.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's just the casting that Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker is the good guy. He's kind of bland.
Right.
You know, he's got like a hero's heart or whatever.
Yeah.
But Harrison Ford is like the real pioneering, like...
Interesting.
Not going to follow the rules, not taking anybody's
shit.
Well,
let's just say this better. It's a better part. Hansel is a better part than
exactly.
Luke Skywalker, and is better written.
Right.
At the same time, I do think Mark Hamill as an actor is underrated. I think Luke Skywalker gets crapped upon. I mean, that's a lot of reasons why people say that the first Star Wars isn't their favorite, that they prefer Empire, because, you know, for a lot of reasons. But a lot of it's like they say Luke is whiny.
Mm.
I never saw him as whiny. This is me personal. I know that's the general take. Is that he's a whiny, like, annoying kid. I always saw him as just, like, he had a lot of his own agency. He was stuck on his farm planet. But when his uncle and aunt died, he like, got up immediately and, like, got to business.
Yeah.
Like, training with Obi-Wan, going on a crazy adventure, you know, selling all his possessions, and becoming, like, a badass pilot by the end of the movie that blows up the Death Star.
Yeah.
I always like Luke, and I love him in the second one, too, and I love him in the third one.
Well, that's why it's wish fulfillment for a lot of teenagers that are watching it, because
yeah.
the parts of the like beginning of the movie that are quote unquote whiny are extremely relatable to most teenagers. You feel like you're independent and you should be free, and yet you're not free because whatever adult you live with is telling you like what you need to do all the time.
Right. So I think maybe children like us who saw Star Wars as, you know, children and not as adults see Luke a little differently. We were able to grow up with him a bit more. Whereas if you're an adult that sees Star Wars, maybe you just kind of look at Luke and it's like, oh, that's a lame character. I don't know. Because it's one of these things that's like at some point recently I watched Star Wars with someone who never watched it before. And it's like you watch it through their eyes and you see all the flaws that you yourself like don't like brushed over with an emotional like memories and love. Mm. And when you see through that, you start to see like media differently. You're like, oh, wait, maybe Star Wars isn't quite as great as I hold it up to be. I mean, I think it's great, obviously, but you know what I'm saying, though, right? So it could be one of those things. But anyway, I personally love Mark Hamill. I love Luke Skywalker.
No, I'm not like saying anything bad about Mark Hamill or his performance as Luke Skywalker. I'm just saying that the part is written as like the nice guy. It's not super super exciting compared to Harrison Ford.
And it's cool that a lot of these roles he's taken since Star Wars, he played against type. I mean, a lot of it was voiceover roles, but he plays evil like characters with weird edges to them.
Yeah,
and he's done other parts too. I know he's done like the WB live shows, like The Flash. He played a weird character, and he's done a lot of good turns. I just like. The last thing I want to say is that I just love Mark Hamill as a human being. He's a great, you know, you read interviews, you get a sense of personal life. I mean, he is a massive celebrity in a way, so it's not like there's anything bad that's ever been written about him.
No.
He seems like a really great guy who's really affectionate. In real life, he's a huge nerd. He loves comics.
He just seems so patient. You see him at, like, Comic-Con after Comic-Con answering, like, the same questions about, like, what was it like to be Luke Skywalker? And he just, like, smiles and, tells the story of what it was like.
And he was, like, a nerd. He was a nerd. Yeah, I mean, he was a nerd before it was cool. He had, like, a huge comic book collection as a teenager and kid, which I always think is interesting, because he grew up to be like a really like he grew up to be a handsome celebrity actor and it's not like he was a conceited 70s teenager. You get the sense it's like he was this nerd in real life.
There's attractive nerds.
I know, absolutely. I'm just saying it's like it's not necessarily what you expect. Like, and he's also like a huge Beatles fan, which I love. You know, he's like an obsessive Beatles nut. Like all the, he's a collector of things. He's just a cool guy and very genuine and a nice guy. So this is my my torch I'm holding for Mark Hamill. I get to talk about him in a podcast. It's really nice. All right, so back to this episode. It opens on the Hobgoblin. Like, there is a really brief shot that humanizes the Hobgoblin, because until his identity is revealed, like, seasons later, in many twists and turns, you just get this one quick moment where you see this bald guy put on the Hobgoblin mask from behind. So you don't see his face.
But you do get to know right away that it's a mask, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I know, because the mask is so alive, like Deadpool's mask and Spider-Man's mask, that you don't know if it's like part of his face. It's one of the tricks of cartoonery comic books. So then we cut to the Kingpin. We get another part of his character that we haven't really seen yet, where he's going to a groundbreaking ceremony for a new college building named in his honor. I guess he donated the money for it. And Smythe is talking to him on his teleconference TV in the limo. He's like, why are you doing this? And Kingpin's like, I must keep a public face so people will never suspect I'm the Kingpin.
Right.
And I just love the Kingpin as a character. This is another great aspect of him, that he's like this benevolent, charity-driven philanthropist in the real world that no one would even ever suspect he's the Kingpin, including Peter Parker, which comes up much later in the series, which is great.
And the money he's donated for this new building of a college, it's for a building where they study criminology.
Right, so it's the Fisk School of Criminology.
I guess there's your proof that he does have a sense of humor after all.
Right, yeah, I mean, it's great. He's just a perfect, amazing three-dimensional villain. The Kingpin's an all-time great character and all-time perfect character in this Spider-Man show specifically. I mean, it makes me... It's why I felt the Kingpin was wasted in the Daredevil Netflix series. I thought D'Onofrio played him amazingly, but I just want to see him against Spider-Man more than anything. That's just me personally. Maybe that's not necessary, but to me, Kingpin needed to be in the MCU as a major film character. He's that cool of a villain. Yeah, I don't like him like shuffled off to a Netflix TV series.
I don't know. He was great in that series.
He was.
But I agree. should be repurposed.
I mean, the problem, you know, and I got to go on another rant here. The problem with Kingpin in the Netflix series is that in season one of Daredevil, spoilers if you haven't seen it, he gets exposed and arrested at the end of that season.
Yeah.
That is such a, you can't do that to the Kingpin. You can't, like, waste that. He needs to always get away at the end. No one ever needs to suspect him. All the superheroes that know he's the Kingpin need to always seem like crazy lunatics. That they, you know what I mean? That, mm-hmm. like, no one would ever suspect Wilson Fisk. You have to play that out for what it's worth. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a huge misstep with an otherwise well-performed...
Maybe they didn't know that they were getting a second season?
You still got to let the Kingpin get away.
Closure on it?
You can't have the Kingpin be arrested. I find that insane.
It's just my best guess.
Right.
But.
All right, anyway. So that's what the Kingpin is up to. Meanwhile, Peter Parker's getting an amazing bit of New York City luck that... rarely happens to anyone who actually lives here. His friend Harry Osborn, who we haven't really seen too much in the show yet.
Well, they don't know each other that well.
Which is interesting, because in a lot of other media, they portray like that they were friends since children, and things like that. I don't remember quite from the comics. I think they were just high school pals, or maybe even they met in college. But here, it's like they're not like the closest of friends. Harry says he's a friend of Flash Thompson's his best friend, which I think is also from the comics as well, before he gets closer to Peter. But anyway, he's like, I don't know you that well, Peter, but I want you to move into this apartment my dad bought for me. And it's an incredible apartment.
Right. And he's like, my dad will only let me move into it if I have, like, a roommate to move in with me that's responsible.
Right.
So, because Peter Parker, you know, from the looks of it, seems like a responsible guy, that's who Harry... tries to enlist to move in with him.
Right. I mean, no, really, in reality, he is a responsible guy.
Yeah.
Right. You know, as Spider-Man, he's saving the city.
Depends on your perspective.
Right. I know. Exactly. That's Spider-Man's curse, is that, like...
if you're Mary Jane, then he's not a responsible guy.
Or Felicia
guy.
Hardy, or yeah, even Aunt May, or his boss, J. Jonah Jameson, like, they, and his best friends, they all, like, see him as, like, letting him down. Yeah. Letting them down constantly.
But for some reason, Harry Osborn...
Right, so Peter wins the New York City lottery for young people. He's getting a skyrise apartment that overlooks Central Park that looks like it's got multiple rooms with a huge, we'll see it later, it's got like a huge living room, kitchen, you know, his room itself has like enormous sky windows in it, which he says are perfect for web slinging. Mm-hmm. I mean, and
so far you've only described a normal apartment, but
no. Well, what do you mean? I'm saying it's Central
Park.
You're
like, it has several rooms.
Yeah, right. Well, in New York City, that's, you know.
I know.
We currently occupy a single room apartment.
That's true.
Great luck for Peter. We'll talk more about his apartment as we go along. Anyway. Yeah, and also he doesn't have to pay rent. That's the most incredible part.
Mm-hmm.
He says, Harry says, my dad's covering all the rent. You know, you don't have to worry about that. So that's like, you know, also double winning the lottery too. Like one thing to get a great place, another thing you have to pay for it. But Peter's not quite ready to take it just yet. He has to think about it. But, you know, later in the episode he does take it. Like, it's no question. So meanwhile, Peter is going to the groundbreaking ceremony for this new Fisk School of Criminology. Harry's going with him. Peter's there in the capacity to take pictures. Joan Jade and Jameson's, like, nervous that Peter hasn't showed up yet, and he's already grumbling to himself about, where's that Parker kid? He better get a good shot of me. Fisk is doing the groundbreaking. He's got a golden shovel. And then out of the sky, the Hobgoblin comes to with the intention to assassinate Fisk. He aims his laser pistol at him. And I really like Hobgoblin's laser gun in this episode, too.
Mm-hmm. His tech is amazing.
A lot of the guns in the Spider-Man show are really, like, weak and lame, even compared to the X-Men show, which also had laser guns. Mm-hmm. Like, these are specially tuned down. But the Hobgoblin's is, like, kind of menacing and cool. Anyway, Peter's Spider-Sense goes off. He saves Fisk's life. Which is a plot element that'll come back later in the series, too, which is really great, too, the way that, essentially, Wilson Fisk will have affection for Peter Parker as the kid who saved his life.
It's also just incredible. I mean, the reason Peter's able to do it is because his Spider-Sense tells him that something's coming.
Right.
But when you see the shot of him pushing Fisk out of the way so that he dodges the laser, I mean, Fisk is, like, I don't know, like, enormous, yeah. like, four times the size of Peter.
Right, he's a 400-pound man of pure muscle, like, magical muscle. He's not a mutant or anything, he doesn't have superpowers, but, like, weirdly they established that Wilson Fisk has, like, extra human strength somehow.
Yeah.
That he could smash, like, steel with his fists.
All I'm saying is the fact that Peter's able to push him out of the way is incredible.
Right, yeah, no one really questions that, although Jameson says, wow, that was incredible, but where did Parker go?
Yeah.
You know, because immediately after he saves him, he runs into an alley, changes into a Spider-Man outfit, and goes after the Hobgoblin. It's a pretty cool fight. There's some elements I like in this fight in the sense that they don't forget about the crowd below mm-hmm. as the fight's happening. So you hear some loose New York City commentary as the two are fighting in the sky. Like, one guy's like, Hobgoblin versus Spider-Man. I hope they finish each other both off. You know, like, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And I just love hearing that. I like when New York City's alive. Because mm-hmm. a lot of times in the show, and you'll see it later in this episode, the streets of New York City are very bare, either a night or a day, and that's mainly because of animation, I think. They just can't animate cheaply thousands of people lining the streets of New York pointing at the sky at all times.
Mm-hmm.
It's so they just, you know, in all these quick action shots of seeing Spider-Man swing over a street, it's either one of those, like, cheesy CGI
yeah.
camera zooms, or it's just nothing's on the ground.
Also cuts down on casualties.
I don't think that's the intention of the show, because the streets are, like, bare of cars, too.
Mm, yeah.
It just seems like they just don't animate it. That's my impression. Regardless of that, like, so that's why I like moments like this, where, like, Denzians of New York are making their funny little sarcastic comments about Spider-Man. What goes on next? So they continue to fight a Hobgoblin. Peter's, like, attached to his wing jet thing with his spider webs. Hobgoblin flies way into the atmosphere to the point where he's in, like, airspace, and a commercial airliner jet's about to smash into Spider-Man. So Peter has to let go. And this is one of my most favorite aspects of the whole series. He's falling. He's like, okay, I'll just swing my way out of here. But no, he's out of web fluid. Cut to commercial. We're watching on Amazon Prime, so there's no commercials. He's falling out of the sky. He's freaking out. He's got no web fluid. At first, he kind of, like, skids with his feet on a skyscraper in a painful way. And he's like, I never tried this before.
Yeah, his grip isn't strong enough.
Yeah, which is, like, really cool to, like, imagine the physics all at play with his magical spider powers. So he has to sort of leap off the skyscraper off his feet, and then he, like, aims for a window cleaning scaffold. He grabs onto it. He's like, yes, got it. And, like, you in the audience are, like, right along with him. But then that breaks immediately, too. Like, double jeopardy now. He's falling again. He does manage to, like, luckily get tied up in, like, a...
some kind of awning fabric.
Like a canvas, yeah, with ropes. And he just, like, saves himself right on those...
right before he gets spiked with, like, a fence that has pointy tops.
Right, yeah, like one of those classic New York City pointy top fence that people can't climb over.
As they're known.
Right, yeah. I mean, I know they're in all cities and all towns, but still. So I just love the moments when Peter runs out of web fluid. It's like, it gives you, like, a real sense of anxiety, especially when you're a kid.
But also of how great he is, because the web fluid is manufactured. It's not naturally part of his spider powers. But then when he loses it, you're like, oh, wow, he actually is really great. He can do whatever he needs to do pretty much without it.
Right. Absolutely. It's just a great aspect of the character in the show that they highlight that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see back at the groundbreaking ceremony, Fisk is appropriately annoyed. He wants to know who attacked him as he drives off in his limo. Harry runs to his dad, Norman, who is there. He's like, Dad, are you okay? And Norman's like, I'm fine. And he, like, rolls up the window on his son in his own private limo and zooms off, leaving his son in the dust. And Harry's like, yeah, I'm fine too, Dad. And you start to see the layering of this complex father-son dynamic, which is just... all the emotional stakes of all the characters in the show are fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Well-drawn, well-rounded. So we get a sense of that. It's like... it's interesting how they can build sympathy for a character... like, Harry seemingly has it all. He's rich, you know. He doesn't have many cares in his life. But you have sympathy for him because his dad is such an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wants his father's love. Harry talks about earlier how his dad's been trying to buy his love and affection through money and gifts ever since his parents got divorced, and how it just doesn't work on him. And it's just like, you know, that's like great stuff, you know. It makes people human with that, like, it busts stereotypes and all sorts of things. What happens next? Back at Oscorp, Hobgoblin comes to confront Norman. Hobgoblin obviously fucked up the assassination, and Norman's like, "You're fired. You know, you didn't do what I said." And Hobgoblin starts asking a lot of questions, like, "Who is this Kingpin anyway? Why do you want him dead? Or why do you want Fisk dead? Of all, he doesn't know he's the Kingpin yet." Mm-hmm. And Norman's like, "I don't have to tell you anything." And Hobgoblin's like, "Okay, well, I want more money and more of your weapons to finish the job." And Osborn's like, "No, you're fired. Get out of here. And if you threaten my life, I'm going to reveal to the whole world who you are. You're just a two-bit ambitious hood that I hired. You're no one special. And so I've got leverage over you." Hobgoblin, like, sort of, he doesn't want to take that chance, but he flies away. He says, "Well, I'm keeping this wing you gave me, and we're not through, Osborn." Mm. So that's an interesting dynamic there. Meanwhile, back in Queens at Aunt May's house, Peter is a local hero. They're showing him rescuing Wilson Fisk on television. Aunt May is quite upset about this. She doesn't like all the risks he takes all the time, like throwing himself in these dangerous situations. But it's here where they discuss that Peter is going to move out of Aunt May's house for good. Mm-hmm. He says, "Well, I'll stay if you want me to, Aunt May." And she's like, "Well, no, it's what young people have to do." And she says, "And by the way, Mary Jane's moving out of Anna Watson's house, and Anna's going to move in with me." Peter's like, "Oh, this is perfect. Like, great."
But Aunt May's sad.
Yeah, like,
she sheds a tear.
Now, do you think she sheds a tear just because Peter is leaving, or because she's, like, finds Anna Watson annoying?
Oh, I thought it was because of Peter.
I think it's both, because they haven't gotten too much into the Anna Watson character yet, but every time she's at Aunt May's house, she's always sort of, like, hectoring her about a lot of different stuff. Like, I don't think Anna likes Peter at all, and she probably doesn't approve of the relationship between Mary Jane and Peter. Mm-hmm. I might be a little bit off on that, but there's, like, an element where Anna's just, like, this annoying stick in the mud, and Aunt May is more, like, just sweet and nice, and she has to put up with Anna Watson's bullshit. Oh. So maybe that's, like, why she's a little annoyed that, like, Anna, you know, like, that this is, it's not quite the perfect solution.
I mean, maybe, but we haven't seen it yet.
Right, we haven't seen it yet. But it's, like, it's nice that we're exploring Aunt May's, like, emotional depth. She's not just a two-dimensional, like, nice old lady. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, sadness going on about aging and, you know, all sorts
of
stuff.
She lost her husband, and right. Peter's moving out.
Right, yeah. All right, so then what else is going on? Peter, like we said, is the local hero on TV. He's a little bit full of himself. And then Peter moves into the apartment we talked about.
Right.
They're having a housewarming party. Flash Thompson's area. He says, "I can't believe your dumb luck, Parker." Because he thought he was getting the apartment. I totally sympathize with Flash. I'd be...
You'd be livid.
If I was 22 and I was best friends with somebody who was, like, really rich and got a new apartment and I wasn't allowed to move in with him and my archenemy was, I don't know what I would say. It is so lucky of Peter to get that place. Although the apartment has a lot of interesting details. It's covered in these, like, weird cosmic paintings.
Yep.
Like, pictures of the
outer
universe.
Space.
Mary Jane, I think, refers to them as day-glow velvet paintings. I don't know what she's referring to exactly.
She says, "Nice place. I hope you don't ruin it with day-glow velvet paintings."
But is she talking about the cosmic paintings being day-glow?
I don't think so. It's just, like... She's giving an example of bad taste of, like, how they might ruin it.
But you said to me that you didn't like Mary Jane's personal taste in this moment.
Not in this moment.
No, I mean, just in general.
Oh yeah, earlier, when the episode first came on, we were talking about Mary Jane's outfit.
Yeah, so we haven't really talked about her generic outfit on the show yet.
I don't know. The, like, lavender and yellow, like, top combination that she has on is just kind of weird.
She's got lavender pants, like, red cowboy boots... and a yellow sweater, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't like this fashion combo of hers?
It
seems like she's got a lot of mobility in it, you know? She's not a damsel in distress wearing a dress all the time.
That's true.
She seems like she can run around a lot, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that. I just don't like her color choices, that's all.
Right,
but
fair
it's
enough.
Like, comic specific, so whatever.
Well, I don't even know if it's comic specific. I think in the comics she had a lot of different outfits.
Oh.
In a cartoon, they typically just stick with one outfit for all characters.
Yeah,
they're always wearing the same clothes.
Right.
So, you know, Peter's real happy about his new apartment, his own private room. It's like a whole new era for him. Now he's centrally located in Midtown. It really helps him be Spider-Man a lot easier.
So they have this party going on, and then I don't know. They don't show us too much of the party, but cut to the next morning. Peter wakes up.
Well, right before that, Hobgoblin goes to the Chrysler Building to find Fisk.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
And he has this cool power on his wing where it can, like, shoot a laser circle at the wall and just make it melt in a perfect circle.
Yeah, he does it at a window, I think, right?
Right, at a window, at a glass window, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he flies in. He finds, like, Fisk's, like, private apartment or something. He activates a secret panel. An elevator opens up, and it grabs Hobgoblin with some, like, crazy science claw and brings him to Fisk's private lair in the tower of the Chrysler Building. So it's here that Hobgoblin discover Fisk's secret that he's the Kingpin. He's really impressed by the setup. He also talks about the mythology of the Kingpin. He's like, wow, I always thought it was just a stupid rumor that there was one person who controlled, like, most of the crime in the entire world. Which, and when Hobgoblin says that out loud, it does seem, like, really
totally crazy.
Implausible that the Kingpin has as much power as he does. But it's a comic book. Kingpin, you know, at first he's going to just kill the Hobgoblin with all his guards, but then Hobgoblin, like, amuses him with his impertinence, as Smythe calls it. And he's like, listen, I want to strike a deal with you, Kingpin. I'll tell you who tried to kill you if you, like, pay me money. That's his primary motivation, is getting cash.
Mm-hmm.
Kingpin says, okay, all right, I'll make a deal with you. You sort of remind me of myself. He says that a little bit later. I might take you on as protege, which annoys Smythe to no end.
Yeah.
Smythe has a lot of good, like, searing lines off to the side about this whole situation. He does not trust Hobgoblin, does not like being pushed away. There's a weird scene where Smythe is saying, like, we're going to have to upgrade your weapons. And you see Smythe typing on a computer, seemingly, like, upgrading his wing. But nothing ever really comes of that, because Hobgoblin gets an upgrade later from Osborn, as we'll discuss in a minute. So that was kind of strange. But then Hobgoblin does talk about... Smythe says, why do you dress that way? And he says, the Hobgoblin for centuries has been a symbol of pure terror in all human civilizations or something. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was just a bizarre thing. And then he says, like, and I want this face to be the last one anyone sees before I kill them.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulls on his rubber mask and makes the crazy googly eyes. And it's just, despite it being very similar to the Joker, it's a very fun performance by Mark Hamill.
Mm-hmm.
As a stupid aside, it made me think, like, where goblins rank in all-time monsters. I mean, you got your vampires, your werewolves, you know.
Trolls, giants,
ghosts. Yeah, ghosts.
Zombies.
Bigfoots, yeah. Goblin is kind of not, like, the most...
It's not the first one you think of.
No, it's not the first one you think of, but it doesn't mean it's, like, the wimpiest one either.
I don't really know what it is,
yeah,
honestly.
What is a goblin? It's kind of like a troll, but...
taller.
Different context. It's a fun word, though. It's such a great Halloween word, a goblin, and it reminds you of, like, goo and, like, witches, like, brewing things, you know. I don't know. Like, it evokes all that imagery to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and that's part of his character, too. He's, like, a Halloween character.
Mm.
Because I guess one of the weapons Kingpin does give him, he gives him the pumpkin bombs.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is a great, great aspect to the villainry of the Green Goblin and the Hobgoblin, those pumpkin weapons. It's just such a iconic, weird-looking weapon that's kind of scary and, like, macabre at the same time.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the Hobgoblin is now working for Kingpin. He busts into Harry's apartment for the purpose of kidnapping Harry. He knocks out Harry and Peter. Aunt May is coming to visit just by coincidence. So they're knocked out. Harry's kidnapped, taken back to the Kingpin's lair for ransom. Kingpin is quite pleased about this. Meanwhile, Aunt May is in a coma. Peter is, like, freaking out, and he's enraged, calls 911. Aunt May is essentially in a coma at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor says she's suffered some kind of seizure where the mind has retreated for protection.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a weird way of putting that. That's just, like, some stupid, like, television doctor speak.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if such coma exactly exists where the mind retreats under extreme stress. I mean, maybe. Anyway, Peter then, like, remarks to himself in one of his great tormented monologues about how he feels cursed his whole life. Like, even when he's trying to do good as Peter, not even a Spider-Man, that bad stuff happens to him and the people closest to him. And I just like that element to Peter's character, that he feels like he's got some kind of maloik on him, you know, some kind of black cloud. Nothing ever works out for him. And then we see after Hobgoblin dumps Harry off at Kingpin's, he wants his money now. Kingpin says, I'll pay you when I say I pay you. So Hobgoblin's a little annoyed at this. No one's giving him his money. So he flies back to Osborn. Oh, well, then Kingpin taunts Osborn and says, oh, look, I've captured your son. Now you can either hand over all your patents to all your technology or your for your son's life, or your son's going to die.
And he's got to be encased in a glass tube.
Right, a golden glass tube. And what's fucked up about Norman Osborn, and it's true to the character, is, like, it's a tough choice for him. You know, he doesn't – he's so obsessed with his science and his company that – and he doesn't, like, care about his son, who he sees kind of as weak and a failure – that he, like, has to think about it almost. You know, he's enraged. He wants his son back, obviously. And he also sees that he's been double-crossed by Hobgoblin because Kingpin cuts him into the feed of the taunting. So, but then, meanwhile, Hobgoblin, on his own volition, flies back to Osborn and wants to set up a triple cross. And this is a great character. A character that, like, is, like, weaving a believable triple cross is amazing. At least in my book. It's hard to pull off, and it's ridiculous when it happens, but it's great to see. So he flies back to Osborn. He's like, listen, like, give me better weapons, and I'll get your son back. I want to kill the Kingpin and take over as the new Kingpin, essentially. And Osborn reluctantly agrees to this. He gives him a newer, like, bigger, badder wing, which is...
which he just had waiting, just coincidentally.
Yeah, like, and first Osborn denies that he would have such things, but Hobgoblin's like, no, you scientists always have, like, a newer, better model ready to go. And I like this new wing in that he takes a smaller wing and it, like, fits in, like, perfectly with the bigger one. That's got to be some kind of toy thing, you know? That's like, it's like, you've bought the Hobgoblin in his wing. Get the new, bigger wing.
Well, it's also good in story development, though, because then he has this remote control where he can control both parts of it.
Osborn says it even comes with a remote control, like, it's fancy technology. It's really great. So Osborn gives him more weapons. He's forced to work with the Hobgoblin again. Meanwhile, Peter is trying to, he needs to let Norman know that his son's been kidnapped. So he goes to Oscorp. They're not letting him into the facility. There's, like, even his mother's not allowed to visit him, you random stranger. He's like, oh, but I'm his son's roommate.
Yeah.
So Peter takes upon himself, he flips over the security fencing, not as Spider-Man, but as Peter, breaks into the facility as Peter, is web crawling, like, around the ceilings as Peter. And you see television cameras, and he doesn't seem to care.
Yeah, it's very risky.
I think that was a mistake on the animator's part in a weird way, that he would take that chance, that he just wouldn't be in a Spider-Man. But the thing is, he needs to confront Norman as Peter Parker, not as Spider-Man, to tell him, from a humanistic standpoint, he can't, like, show up as Spider-Man to Osborn's place. That wouldn't make any sense. So it makes sense that he has to, like, visit him as Peter Parker. But still, you're right, very risky in the end. But then he notices that the Hobgoblin is in there with Osborn, so he turns into Spider-Man. He gets into another fight with Hobgoblin. They're flying out of the facility. Oh, meanwhile, Smythe has, like, been watching Hobgoblin's triple cross, and he's putting that in his back pocket, too, to probably tell the Kingpin that they've been triple crossed. Meanwhile, so Hobgoblin and Peter fight with his newer, badder wing. They're flying around the city. Another J. Jonah Jameson advertisement gets destroyed. I hope that becomes a recurring theme. It, like, I think it just happened in the last episode, too. It was pretty funny. We see more of the weapons from the Hobgoblins. It, like, shoots out these razor buzzsaws, which is stuff we see in the first Spider-Man movie.
And it has tracking bombs, pumpkin bombs that follow their target.
Right, yeah. So now they're not just little things he tosses. They're, like, they're smart bombs.
Yeah.
And that's essentially where the episode ends. Like, because Peter, like, flies into, like, an abandoned building, and the smart bombs fall him and explode, and it says to be continued.
Very cute smart bombs.
Yeah, so that's the end of Hobgoblin Part 1. Another great entry into the series, in my opinion. You get Mark Hamill, like, you know, essentially doing a reprise of the Joker, but who cares? It's Mark Hamill. It's great. Hobgoblin's a great character in the show. You get more emotional stakes with all the characters, as we described. I mean, just, like, so much going on, so dense. what did you think, Sonia, of this episode? What's your final summation?
Very similar to yours. Very good episode. Good to see a new villain in the mix. And nice that we have another... Is this two-parter or three-parter?
I think it's a two-parter.
Two-parter, yeah. Nice to have another serialized one where we get a little more development of the villain that we're meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, these episodes, they just seem to have a lot more content than the X-Men episodes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say?
You know, maybe we'll have to go back and watch a few X-Men episodes just to remind ourselves,
like,
the difference.
Like, for comparison?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to, like, say anything bad about X-Men. Like,
no, yeah. It's just different types of shows.
It's like more emotional content or something. I feel like it's more to kind of like describe and dissect.
The X-Men show had more pregnant pauses, more times for characters to think. The tension and action built up more slowly. The Spider-Man show is like a nonstop runaway freight train most of the time. And it's an interesting thing because you think that, oh, that could be bad. But really it's great because it's like they just, they, in that format, they managed to weave in so much, so many different like emotional stakes and character building and backstory. Like, it's all happening at once. It's just, like, exciting to read. It's like, the most exciting Spider-Man comic book come to life, in my opinion. It's like that.
Yeah.
And it's something that's, like, reflective of the character itself. It's just so, like, there's something about Spider-Man that's so now and so in your face. It's just, like, eternally, there's something eternally great about that character. So, I'm still really enjoying this series.
Yeah, same.
Okay. So that's all we got for this one. Hope you join us next week. Before we go, I want to remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. You can rate and review the podcast 5 stars in your local iTunes service. That would really help us out. You could join the X-Men Task podcast Facebook group where you can talk to us about any of your questions, any of your concerns. And lastly, I want to say to, like I said, with our like behind the scenes drama with trying to get this podcast operating at a normal level again, there might be some glitches along the way. Hopefully not. Hopefully it's all behind us. But so I apologize preemptively for that. Let me know in the X-Men Task podcast Facebook group if there is stuff like that going on. If you're not seeing it in your feeds, it should be there from this point on. You can also access the podcast from Buzzsprout now too. If that's another service you like to use, you could just search us out there. X-Men Task Podcast. I think it's xmentaskpodcast.buzzsprout.com. So that's another place to access it. I'm still going to put the episodes on WillieSimpson.com if any of you are still like following along there for whatever reason. I don't think it's many of you, but just in case, it will be on that website too. It won't be directly connected to the podcast services anymore, but you'll still be able to listen to it. And lastly, that's all I have to say. All that crazy nonsense, hopefully that's far behind us and we can carry on as normal in the future. Sonia, any final words?
End of housekeeping.
Yes, thank you very much. Good night, everybody.
Good night.